find the longest path.
Hello and welcome to Schloss Dogstool for the Fifth Complexity cast. Today our guest is Eldar Fisher, the always entertaining Israeli, an expert in property testing. Welcome to the show, Eldar.
Thanks.
Alright, so what is this property testing stuff anyway?
Well, the basic idea is that we live in modern times and you want to say something about the input at hand, but you really don't want to take time to read the input.
So you have something huge like, say, the internet, and you don't have time to download the entire internet, but yet you still want to say something useful about it?
Yes. You have today there are many cases where you have extra large data sets, and also there are many cases where you have very low memory or very low resources, even if the data set is not that huge. You just have no time.
And yet you're able to do stuff anyway.
Well, you are able to do something. Of course, you cannot do anything deterministically because you have to consider reading the entire input even if you don't read it.
So how can you read the entire input if you don't read it?
Well, you toss a coin, so you consider reading the entire input, but you actually only read the bits that came up when you tossed your coins. But even if you do that, you still are not able to decide things exactly because if your input is not okay but almost okay, there's still a good chance that you miss the just tiny little bit that makes it not okay. So in property testing, what you do is distinguish between inputs that have a certain property and inputs that are fixable in a sense.
So give me some examples. Like what kinds of things do you like to test? Like regular languages, right?
Regular languages, you can test for regular languages. You can test for all those nice NP-complete property of graphs such as free colorability. This was one of the results that started the property testing in earnest by Goldach, Goldwasser and Ron. The idea there is, although it is NP-complete, the graphs that show that it isn't the computer actually close with regards to a small relative to n square number of edges. They are close to being free colorable. If something is really, really far from being free colorable, it doesn't have a tiny global reason for it. It has many reasons and small ones, detectable ones.
And does that have to do with this regularity lemma?
Well, free colorability, thankfully you don't need the regularity lemma, but one of the better known users of regularity lemma in computer science, it has many users in combinatorics, is that it more or less, now we already know that it more or less tells you what graph properties you can test in the dense model and which properties you cannot. So if you can test a property, you can do it by the regularity lemma. Unfortunately, there are many properties which this is the only way you can do it.
Tell the audience in very simple terms, as best as you can, what the regularity lemma is.
Well, the simplest terms, every graph is a random graph. This is what it says. To make it a little more accurate, well, a graph can be part clicking but part empty. So what the lemma says is that you can partition it to a constant number of sets. We'll return to that constant later, depending on your randomness parameter. And after you partition the vertices, most of the pairs will be quasi-random, will be what is called regular pairs.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. So, you were complaining about having to use the regularity lemma, so what's the disadvantage of the regularity lemma?
Well, let's go back to this constant. As it turns out, this constant depends on the parameter epsilon, which will depend on the approximation parameter of the testing if you want to do testing.
Yeah, so say we want epsilon maybe 5%, 0.05.
So here comes the catch. Actually, the only good thing to be said for this constant is that it is a constant. Theoretically, it is a constant and it depends only on epsilon. The problem is it's a tower whose height is polynomial in epsilon, and that's for the simple applications.
So let's say we had a graph the size of the internet. Let's say we had the internet graph, right? Yeah. What your constant is telling me is I only need to look at a constant number of nodes where the constant is in fact much larger than the entire internet anyway.
Yeah, I think more to the future where the internet encompasses the entire universe. I think then...
And even then the constant is still bigger than the internet, it won't be.
Yeah, but theoretically it's still a constant. A constant is a constant.
A constant is a constant. So what you're saying is even though we have these theoretical things, they're not exactly what one might call practical.
No, they're not. There are some attempts to... prove certain films using weaker versions of the regular dilemma, which have better constants. But most of what we know about dense graphs in this setting is wholly in the theoretical realm.
So why should your man on the street care about this?
Well, I don't know about the man on the street, but why should computer scientists care about it? Apart from settling the theoretical question, which being a theoretician I'm all for, I believe that there are many cases that theory gives intuition to the practicing computer scientist, even if it does not give the actual rules. Many heuristics, you can prove that they in some sense work with lousy constants or only for special cases, and the practitioner says, oh, this verification actually usually works in not too many days on my specific example of electronic circuit or Intel chip. Theoretical aspects do give some more credibility to the heuristics.
So, I mean, I guess we do have some places theory has actually had really nice applications, say in RSA, for instance, and some other areas of cryptography.
Yes, it did. Although, even the RSA, when you think of it, it was not proven to be NP-hard. It was proven to be something which is less, but still conjectured to be hard.
But more importantly, it's actually used, right? When you use a browser, use RSA, or Lempel-Ziv encoding, for instance.
Yeah, it's used because theory does give indications that people will probably not be able to crack it in the near future, although it does not give a proof that people will not be able to crack it ever.
Well, that's because we can basically not prove anything we can't do in complexity theory. Yeah, but still, boosting, we even have an award now, right? The Konolakis Prize for Theory and Practice. The ACM does that.
Well, yes. Not.
It's not yet the.
Some theory really does work in practice.
Right. Of course, we're not talking about any work that either you or me has ever done that might ever have any practical implication. Me being a complexity theorist and you doing property testing. Well, so property testing, get back to that, has played a role in some of, like, for example, in the work on probability checkable proofs, and
yeah,
coding theory as well.
Yeah, indeed, PCP and property testing have a common origin. Both started with, both in their beginning made use of the, what we property testing people call the testability of being a low degree polynomial. So they have common roots, and recently they're starting to reconverge at certain places, such as the connection of PCP of proximity on one hand and prover-assisted property testing, as it was called in our community, or the relation of that to tolerant versus intolerant testing.
Yeah, that was a brilliant paper. Who wrote that tolerant versus intolerant testing paper? The one paper that Eldar and I wrote together. Now, basically what we did was we looked at the question of intolerant testing, which requires you either have a property or be close to it, or tolerant testing, where you actually had to accept inputs that were close to the property as well. And we showed some separations between the two.
Yes, tolerant testing is like, if you want an analogy, it's like being allowed to miss your plane by a minute.
good analogy. We shouldn't talk about our own work. Okay, so most of your work, though, has been on these dense graph properties.
Well, perhaps most is a strong term. A dense graph of testing has been announced as almost complete by a few people.
Like yourself.
And Odette Goldach, even before my last work on it with...
So what you're saying is your research career is over, you've accomplished everything you want to accomplish, and now you're done?
No, so that's it. I do not feel complete. I do not feel complete. There are many other...
Time for you to go work for Google and...
No. I was never about going to the industry. Well, there's still a lot of work in power testing that is not related necessarily to dense graphs. Dense graphs in the purely theoretical constant for constant model is indeed there are still some interesting questions there, but the general feeling is that every question is either solved or very hard and will probably not be solved in the near future.
So one of the property testing is one of these topics you seem to gets in the stock and fox a lot. So do you think it's one of these faddish topics, or do you think it's really something that's fundamental? Of course, I'm asking a highly unbiased source here.
Yeah. Well, I think it is here to stay. I think it is here to stay. It has connections to other fields. Including sometimes people in practical computer science started to look at puppet testing. But what has happened that it matures? You know, in the old days where people discovered NP-completeness, you could say, oh, look at this problem is also NP-complete, and that would get them to a conference. But it has matured. Now there are only a few specific problems that you can prove that they are NP-complete, and it will get you to a conference. And there is one certain problem that you can prove for the second time that it is NP-complete and get the best paper. Well deserving, in my opinion. There was a discussion on it actually on your blog recently.
Oh, you mean the NERVS paper?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. She changed the way we teach the PCT theorem.
Yeah.
It's a really good paper.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
But, No, of course there are other great papers to talk as well.
Yeah. So if we go back to our topic, puppet testing has also matured. You know, it is now not that easy to enter a paper just because you say, oh, look at this property. This is also testable, especially if it's a dense graph property for which there are also classification of sorts. There were two papers in this talk, one co-authored by yours truly, and the other was not, the other was by Balash Segedi, Lovas, and a few others.
A few others, yeah. I know which one you really care about.
All I care about, but we can't spend the entire cast reciting names.
Yeah, so if you've ever done anything in property testing, consider yourself named. It's a lot of people. Although I do want to give one shout out to my former colleague at NEC, Rudy Rubenfeld,
one of the founders of puppet testing.
Yeah, so I dedicate this podcast to you, Rudy. now she's at MIT professor now.
Yeah.
So property testing can take you far. But you've done some stuff on logic too, and even connections between logic and property testing.
Yes, I'm still working on connections between logic and puppet testing. One of my first work in puppet testing as a PhD student was also had connections to logic. It was which first order logic propositions are testable in the dense graph model.
So actually one of the things I find interesting is that it's very hard to find properties that you can't test, it seems.
Well, it's not that hard. Actually, sometimes very silly properties can be non-testable. For example, you can, there are even properties of counter-automata that that you can decide with the counter-automata, can get much lower than that, that are not testable, or
whatever a counter-automata is. It's just like a finite automata with a counter.
It's a finite automata with a counter, so it's a stack automata, but with not a lot of options to put on the stack.
One option. How about just giving me one property? Put a gun to your head and say, give me a property that's not testable.
Isomorphism of dense graphs, that's one that I used a lot, so this is the one I know in my sleep. Another one, being a concatenation of two palindromes, this is one of the first
UU reversed, VV reversed.
Yeah,
that's right. I never.
Yeah, you cannot test it with a constant number of queries.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a nice, simple one.
But it is also interesting to investigate what sublinear number of queries can you test. There are properties with constant size, zero weaknesses, which you cannot test in less than O of n queries.
Eldar used to be at NEC back when I was there. He was a postdoc there.
And those were the days.
And we had great enjoyable lunches. We would have arguments about everything. So I'm going to see if I can get Eldar started on something. So Eldar, Windows, Mac, or Linux?
For most purposes, Linux. No, I deny everything.
You deny everything?
Just kidding.
Can I really get your goat on? Anything you want to say about the upcoming Israeli elections?
Yes, but off the record.
Off the record. Go ahead, I'll turn the mic off.
Well, there's an Israeli show which was called something like Politics, and the reason it became famous in Israel is that whenever people got into a screaming match, one of the coming phrases used to, well, let's all calm down, it's not politics, it's not this program.
Okay, and before we say goodbye, just want to mention that Eldar Fisher has a wonderful survey on property testing he wrote for the complexity column of the Bulletin of the European Association of Theoretical Computer Science, BEATCS. And
yes,
you can find out on his webpage, and I'll put a link on the web blog post here.
Okay, the title says it all, really.
And the title is
The Art of Uninformed Decisions.
Yes, and as I'm sure you found this podcast to be an uninformed podcast, time to go. So remember, when you're living in a complex world, best to keep it simple.